Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredible, vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. Welcome back, everyone, to the podcast. And I know it's summer, so you're thinking outdoors, even in the pandemic, or you still find a way to be outdoors. Even though it's kind of hot, my favorite part of the day is at like 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Where the heat is broken, but it's still not dark yet. And it feels like, that's the part where I'm like, this is what makes it all worth it. this lovely time.
I'm a fan of the next hour, the 8:30 to 9:30, where it's still a little bit light outside, and it feels like, and especially when it's humid, even though the heat is broken, it's still a little bit humid. It feels like anything can happen, right? It's really there's sort of a feeling of magic in the air.
Yeah. So even though we've set the stage and talking about how great and how Milwaukee is an amazing summer city, I think, right? Or at least I think we can all agree, it's an amazing city in the summer. We put up with the 9 months of winter.
2 weeks in a row, we've talked about summer. This is how much we love the summer, right? Like last week, we talked about summer.
Maybe this is just us embracing the Midwestern tropes of just talking about the weather to be safe, as safe scripts because of the chaos that surrounds us.
Well, you know what we'd be doing now, right? If it weren't for the pandemic, we'd be talking about Summerfest and all the summer festivals that would otherwise be happening, right? So this is basically the replacement.
This is the replacement, just summer as a whole. So now that we've set for the listener this incredible context, let's talk about being indoors. Let's talk about the library. That's what the episode's about, is talking about the library. We both grew up as nerds, studious nerds, me in the Midwest, you on the West Coast. So I'm going to make that assumption that we had an affinity for the library, or as we called it in my high school, the media center.
That's pretty cool. That's very progressive.
1990s, we call it the media center.
That's very forward-looking.
I think we had like one microfiche, one Apple II LS or whatever. I don't know. What's your fondest or maybe infamous memories of your library? Could be the school or could be the public. Or maybe you had access to the private library. Maybe you knew like the Hewlett Packards and they let you into either the Packard family or the Hewletts. They let you in to their private library.
You know, I have two stories. The first is my first memory at the library. So I think most of you know, I was born in Taiwan. My parents came over when I was one. They didn't have a whole lot of money. And we lived in Chinatown for the first few years of my life. And as immigrants, there weren't a whole lot of places for my parents to go where they could commune with others, learn English, sort of do all the things that immigrants do. Yeah. And so we spent a lot of time at the Chinatown Library in San Francisco. And it was the first place, there was a place that I saw, I think, Superman on a old, like, I don't know if it was like a projector or an old VCR or something. I mean, the timing doesn't make sense. So it must have been on a projector. In like the community room. And I think it was probably the place where I saw Star Wars for the second or third time when I was a kid, you know, while my parents were like reading the newspaper or, you know, doing other things.
Did that library have like that room where like all the newspapers from all
were
over,
like stacked like, up? Yeah.
We're stacked out. Yeah. Laid out. And it just, and they just sit there. Like, that was like the middle of all that stuff, right?
Yeah, so that was like an evening for us. Like, we'd go out to dinner at like some restaurant in Chinatown, then go hang out at the library because it was free. And I think there's something so interesting and almost revolutionary now, right? Sort of looking back at this idea, right, that there's this place you could go and do something, and it's free, and everybody's welcome. And I got to say, it was a place where it felt. Where I felt welcomed for the first time in this new place. And interestingly, you mentioned the private library. My second story is the a couple of years ago, I took Tammy to go visit upstate New York where I went to college, and we went to the library at my alma mater.
What alma mater? What alma mater? What was it?
Vassar College, small liberal arts.
Drink, everybody.
Seven Sisters School.
After you drink.
So she walked in, and so we walk in together, and I said to her, I'm like, wow, this is a really beautiful place. And she's like, wait, you didn't spend any time in here in college? I'm like, You know, I wish I probably should have. I think I probably needed to spend a little bit more time in this library in college. So, but a beautiful, beautiful research library.
My library memories, the one in my village or my little suburb I grew up in southwestern suburbs of Chicago, called Green Hills Library. It was on the top of a hill, Green Hill. And even though I lived in Palos Hills, it was called Green Hills Library. Couple things about that library that had the biggest hill in town. So winter comes, you always bring your sled. You had to do like homework, but then you like got through your homework, so then you could sled, right? So I always remember, like, put in your time, you're allowed to sled, right? Although after a while, I loved it for a lot of reasons you talked about. Like, they had this, you know, like most libraries have this room where they have sort of like those stacks that are at 45 degree angles, so you can sort of see every magazine that's around, and the magazine was in like that plastic to protect the covers. And I just remember just being, you know, even as a young kid, kind of overwhelmed with all the different magazines, you know, that were there and the newspapers. And I remember the Dewey Decimal System, like learning it. And again, I'm a guy who like memorizing things. So I just sort of remember the 700s is like sports, recreation. Yeah. And I would spend so much time reading Olympic almanacs and just memorizing Olympic cities and record books, and that's, I didn't have access to that stuff at home, but I would just sit there. And there was a game for a while where people go like, give me a year, I could give you the city that Olympics probably took place in. I don't know if I can do it now, but I think there was a time where like I could do that, or I could rip off like, okay, name me 1980 Lake Placid, that's Eric Heiden. Yeah, five, you know, I could like tell you who was like the rock star, Olympian, Munich 72, Mark Smith, or he was like Michael Phelps. And that's to me, I love sports, and going to a library where you have to read all the encyclopedias and the stat books, that just reinforced it. And I had access to all those books. So thank you, Green Hills Library. And thanks for being so patient with me when I didn't return books. It was 2 cents a day was the fines.
That's how they make up their revenue streams, right? It was like Blockbuster before
I had Blockbuster. To wait for Amnesty Day before, returning, all these books. I don't know why, I just had a hard time.
I think there's something that's so like revolutionary about the idea of the library now, right? Because I mean, our libraries are supported by our taxes, and sometimes our late fees. But I mean, we are also a society now that pays subscription services for everything, right? And like the library through taxes is basically a subscription service, right? To be able to have access to all kinds of books, all kinds of movies, all kinds of CDs, all kinds of media, all kinds of other resources, like community rooms, community kitchens, all kinds of programming. We just don't take advantage of it. And it feels like we ought to be, right? Because it's such a rich resource.
Yeah. The mental model of libraries, right, is that they're our society's keeper of books. I can even smell it, the smell of old books. Yeah. Like that's a sense memory. Yeah. But our episode today is about shifting that mindset. And to help us with that is the events and programming librarian in Milwaukee Public Library. She is Christina Gomez. She coordinates library programming for adults and grant projects for Milwaukee Public Library's 13 locations. She came out of UW-Madison in 2010 and joined the MPL that same year. Also, she'll tell her story after a break, but I'm looking forward to having some myths busted about the library. Don't know about you. So after the break, Christina Gomez. Would you like them with a mouse? I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and Christina, welcome to the pot.
Hey, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So I was reading your bio and I didn't know that you were a noted Middle East expert.
Yeah, no hot takes today though.
She's like, I'm representing the library today, guys. You're gonna have to pay me for that opinion. We're not doing that. All right. Christina, thanks again for joining us and bringing the library into this conversation of arts and culture. But before we get into the gig of you talking, you plug in and doing all that, want to know a little origin story for you, Christina. Is it possible that you grew up and you knew as a little one that you were going to be a librarian, or were there other moments along the way that steered you to us? Tell us about your origin story.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a journey. I wish I could say I came out like with my glasses and holding a board book ready to do a story time. But yeah, I don't even remember meeting a librarian until I want to say middle or high school. Yeah. So it wasn't really a role I, you know, envisioned for myself. It came about through two very distinct and I think important ways that kind of showcase the role libraries have for our community. So one was my family comes from Zacatecas, Mexico, yeah. And my father came to the U.S. when he was 18, and English was not a first language for him. So once he made his way to Racine, Wisconsin, which is where I'm from, really needed to connect into free resources for English language learning. And the library is one of the very few places where that's available. So I remember him going to weekly classes at the Racine Public Library. So I remember just having that idea of like, oh, this is a thing that libraries offer. It's not just checking out books. And the impact that can have in someone's life, you know, really made an impression. And then I ended up going to undergrad with an English literature degree, and afterwards really felt I wanted to do something service oriented. So I joined a program called AmeriCorps Vista.
Yeah, here we go.
Here in Milwaukee. And that was a great experience. It wasn't in a library, but it was with a parent information resource center. And I worked closely with a couple of Milwaukee schools. And through my work in community organizing, I connected with a couple of public librarians who were serving youth. And that's really where like the career option came into play, where I was like, I knew I needed to figure out what I wanted to do long term, and the passion they brought to the job, you know, this care for community, but also this you know, intensive kind of research side and information seeking and being a connector really appealed to me. So yeah, after that, I'm like, I'm all in, you know, sign me up. I'll go to graduate school for this.
Wow. That's great. Great to meet a fellow AmeriCorps alum as well. Oh. I'm an AmeriCorps alum as well. So
cool.
And we'll leave David out. David, you get to feel left out. You were selfish and pursued a life of corporate greed.
That's right. Although, yeah, you don't need to hear about my AmeriCorps, my sad AmeriCorps story. But I was tangential. Anyway,
yeah, that's right.
I think the thing that's so interesting to me, Christina, is this idea that like, while library sciences is a real skill, right? Information cataloging, dealing with information, right? How do you make information accessible? I think the thing that I'm sort of pulling from your story, right, is that the community aspect and the care for community and how the libraries as an institution show up for people. Is really the heart of it, right? Like the skill you can do, you can sort of apply in a bunch of different ways, but you have to be a real, I think, special person to be able to like sort of have that, sort of understand that necessity for how libraries function in communities, because it really is one of the last places that exist where everybody's actually welcome, right? And that's, yeah. That I think is a really, really remarkable aspect of the library.
Yeah, I think it makes us unique, you know, in the fabric of our social lives, you know, having a place where there's no expectation that a transaction is happening. It's a space that is safe. Everyone's welcome, all ages, all backgrounds. And really, we're there for the people in our community. So, yeah, I think it's great. And there definitely has been a shift over time in the focus of libraries from things or materials or books or like databases to more like how are we serving our community and having a focus on the people themselves and what they need from us.
It's so inspiring. When I was my last job at the Food Bank Association, one of the things that we really looked to the libraries to do or to partner on was how do we reach people who might need food help, right? So whether that's access to food share or potentially actual food resources. There were some conversations about like, how do you start like library pantries, right? Because it's again, a place where people go. And there was never a librarian or person who worked for the library system that ever said no to us. It was really incredible. They were the partners that were always pretty much on board, right? Because they got it, because they saw right the need every day in and day out. So thank you for your work.
Yeah, and thanks for teeing us up to the present. And now you're working with Milwaukee Public Library. Yes. You know, this is a side note. I mean, I've known people that have studied library sciences. It's like a tough field to get into, in a sense, right? I'm a muggle. I'm an outsider. I read books. I get words, but like, I don't work in the industry. And just, I'm sort of curious, like, it's a tough thing. Am I right or am I wrong? It's a tough gig to get.
Yeah. I mean, it's, it does require a graduate degree. So I think that could be a potential, fortunately, a barrier for a lot of folks just in terms of financial difficulties. But I mean, it's as difficult as a lot of other graduate programs. And then once you have that degree, of course, right, it doesn't guarantee you a position. So it can be a very competitive job market. You know, the people coming out of graduate school now, I'm just so amazed by them. I've been in the field for 10 years and they're coming out with these incredible technology skills because that's what you need. Like we are focusing on individuals and helping communities, but there is a very important technical component to what we're trying to do. And, you know, addressing things like the digital divide, which is a huge issue even here in Milwaukee. So it's competitive, but everyone coming out is so bright and passionate. So I never want to discourage anyone from going to.
I know, that's what I'm doing. Like, I don't know if you want to go into it. And you're totally doing this awesome spokesperson thing for the field. Like, you're totally carrying extra water in this interview than you said. I guess my simple mind is like, I imagine people who want to do this job are passionate about it. They love being around books. And it's not like there's so many gigs, right? Like, again, library is kind of a set deal because it's sort of civically supported. Yeah. Okay. I'm not trying to scare you, but go study it. Sorry. I'm going to get nasty letters from the schools of library sciences from around the Midwest. That's fine. Bring your hate to me. Christina's carrying the water there. All right. Let's pivot to the actual notion, because this notion of you're talking about sciences, right? But we're also talking about arts and culture, right? And would love for you to, from your experience, how have you witnessed the Milwaukee Public Library in terms of its most powerful gift to an arts and culture ecosystem?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'll talk a little bit about how libraries used to be viewed or what our traditional role has been. So a lot of times we're viewed as stewards of culture, right? So we're collecting literature and music, photographs, a prominent person's personal papers that go in our archives, other types of ephemera. And we have this goal of like preserving all of these things in our buildings or making them available online. And I think that's an important role. It's a role we still have. It's a gift to future generations. But just as culture change, so do cultural institutions. We're a cultural institution. So libraries have really shifted their role to not just collecting and providing access to materials or literary arts and resources, but trying to be a more active participant in the art community. So ways we do this, we're directing our resources towards supporting artists. So hiring art professionals for library programs would be an example of that. But we're also dedicating our spaces, our library buildings, to community arts engagement activities. Mm. So an example of that would be, we had an artist in resident program for about 2 years, and that was very new for us, but it's a very concrete example of us directing funding towards local artists and then having a space where the public can really participate in these art activities for free. And you know, we mentioned this earlier, but having a space that is safe, you know, everyone's welcome, no matter what your age is, it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic, status is, it's entirely free. We're in every single neighborhood in the city. It really makes the art programming that we offer accessible in a very important way. And I also think it positions the library as kind of like a critical connector to the arts for a lot of people.
Well, it's 2020. And like, I'm imagining another world, right? Like, I'm imagining all these vibrant people coming and going and all these things, but the public health pandemic, right, has altered the ability for us to convene, and which has definitely been a huge disruptor for arts and culture in the city, around the world, obviously. I would love to hear, sort of, Christina, how have you had to accommodate that really ambitious work, right, of being a connector for the arts and culture, a convener of the arts and culture, given the pandemic? Can you talk about the pivots you've had to make?
Yeah, definitely. So much like other organizations and businesses, the library had to close our the physical buildings in late March so that we were, you know, all safer at home. And as of today, our library buildings remain closed. So we really did this large scale shift for all of our programming to go online. And so that's what we've been doing. And that's what we plan to do for the foreseeable future, is offer virtual opportunities to engage in all of our different types of programming. And we have that for, you know, birth up to older adults. And so, you know, our commitment to supporting Milwaukee artists stays the same. Our commitment to offering arts programming, free arts programming, remains the same. It's just shifting the format of those experiences. So things we already have in place, like as of today, as we speak, we have creative writing and poetry workshops. We have an ongoing series that's focused on fiber arts. There's a weekly performance or dance class for children, and much more in development. So personally, like, one of my strategies for developing library programming is to think about how the arts can be incorporated into any type of program. So how do we integrate arts learning and arts appreciation into things like book discussions and history lectures, as a way to enhance the learning that's already happening and to support creativity? So one specific example of this is we have something called a book to art club. So it's a take on the traditional book club. Maybe you're part of book clubs, maybe not, but, you know, I think we all think of the same thing with a book club. We all read the same book, or at least we intend to. Maybe we finish it, maybe we don't. And then we meet and we talk about it. And a lot of times there are tangents, but that's essentially the goal. So with book to art is, we are actually meeting and creating art together inspired by what we read.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the conversation that's happening, you know, it's still about the book and its themes, but it's also about what inspired us from what we read towards the art we're making. We're also talking about what we're making and why. So it's one of my favorite library programs because it unites literature and art in a very concrete way, in a very accessible way.
Are the books necessarily related to artists or art sort of more traditionally, or is it just like, you know, you read like I don't know, Great Expectations, right? And you're making like costumes or something from
Yeah, no, it literally can be any book. So normally what we do is we kind of identify some books where we know there'd be high interest from folks, and then we read it with a lens of what kind of art might inspire us. So there was a book, actually a poetry collection that we focused on just recently in partnership with Woodland Pattern Book Center. And the poetry was written by a trans poet named Stephanie Burt. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of imagery involving kind of pop culture. There were a lot of books or a lot of poems written from the perspective of inanimate objects. And so the art we made based on that poetry collection was kind of twofold. One was the idea of self-expression, like that poetry was very self-reflective. It focused on Stephanie's journey from a child known as Stefan to who she is now, Stephanie. So we did some art projects that was about kind of self-portraiture and how we express ourselves. And then the other side was also just like, if I were to describe myself as an inanimate object, what would I be? What would my poem be? So yeah, I mean, there are so many different ways to approach that particular project. And I think it's really fun and exciting.
I'm like stunned at the simplicity and elegance of the idea. Like, why did I have to wait 45 years of my life to encounter that idea? That feels like a, I don't know, like we should have done that in the 70s, right? Like, I don't know, it's like my vibe, but like, it's such a beautiful frame, because it just shows how the creation, the act of creation can come from taking in maybe great expectations. I was giggling because I'm like, I loved how you're like, you know, a book that people would be interested in, like, because there's an obvious, like, yeah, people get assigned Great Expectations, they don't read that because they want it, but but let me know when you guys do the 50 Shades of Grey episode.
Well, the first book that popped in my mind was my wife is reading the new Tana French book, and I was like, you make like, you know, forests, right, from the Scottish Lochs or the Irish Highlands or something. So anyways, so yeah, but just sort of reflecting back on Mac's point, like I think I'm similarly stunned by just like the amount of arts programming that's coming on the library, and also the fact that I didn't know about any of this. Right, and so it's like, why don't people know, right, about this? Yeah. And because this is like, it's so, I think in some ways, to Mac's point, it's so simple, but it's elegant, it's exciting, and I think it sort of connects us to like these dual parts of inspiration, right? Like the written word to the making to yeah, how we come together and be with each other. I think it's so exciting. Speaking of people, me particularly, not knowing about all of this incredible programming, I guess how do you communicate all the great stuff that you're doing? And I guess, what would you wish that people knew more about the Milwaukee Public Library?
And if I can add on to that, are there certain groups that you wish you saw more? You know, maybe there's some usual suspects, but man, like, man, it would be so great if, and again, I don't know how you fill that in, but I wonder what your reaction to that is. So.
Yeah, definitely. I think we have some kind of traditional methods of marketing, and maybe that's why a lot of folks don't know about all of the great things, or we're just doing too many wonderful things and it's easy to get lost okay. in the cracks. And Milwaukee does have such a vibrant arts community that I understand why libraries aren't like at the top of the list of, oh, check this out for arts, you know, arts activities. But we're always really interested in seeing more teens, because I think we have a lot to offer for that particular demographic where maybe a lot of other things aren't within reach financially, or maybe aren't welcoming for younger audiences. So I think that age group is an audience we've been making a really kind of concerted effort to reaching out to. I'm always surprised by what people don't know about the library. Mm. Of course, like, I still understand. I mean, especially if you haven't visited a library in, say, like 5 years, first off, it's fine. Like, we can still be friends. it means that you may not know how much libraries have changed in that time. Yeah. We are constantly evolving. So an example of like a huge thing that has changed within the last 5 years about Milwaukee Public Library specifically is we have at one of our library branches, the Mitchell Street branch, which is on Milwaukee South Side. It has an entire community kitchen in its lower level. Mm. And it's called the Cargo Community Kitchen. So this is a space that's dedicated to culinary arts. It's there to support our community's culinary learning and exploration. And I don't know how many people know about it. And that's a bit unfortunate. So we have done things like hands-on family cooking nights. We had presentations by local and regional guest chefs. We had a visit from James Beard award-winning author and chef Michael Twitty. That was about 2 years ago. And then a really fun program called Snack Hack for kids. So like trying to get kids excited about making their own healthy snacks. Yeah. And that's just like, you know, that's 10% of what we do in that space. And it's, I think, something our city should be proud of and use to its fullest. It's a space that can be reserved by community members for free. So much like we have community rooms or conference rooms, then anyone can go online and reserve for whatever purpose they have. You can reserve this community kitchen for whatever it is you're trying to do in that space. So it's such a great resource. And I want more people to know about it. And once we can safely gather again, maybe we'll have like a big open house or potluck for everyone to to meet again and learn more about it.
And there's other examples of just creation spaces within libraries. Am I correct? Right. I think there's another branch that has recording studio that people can access, right? Is that
definitely correct? Yeah, we have.
So I know that. I know about that one. All right.
Makerspaces. So that same branch, Mitchell Street, has a makerspace with a lot of technology that's available. So yeah, like someone wants to make their own podcast or record some music, all the technology is there for them to use for free.
Wow. Incredible. Awesome. You know, I wonder, again, I'm just sort of, as I'm reflecting, you know, David, to your point about how simple that is. I sort of wonder in the age of streaming and Netflix and all this accessible stuff that we don't have to leave our homes necessarily. And of course, given the current thing, I get it, right? Like we're not supposed to leave our homes, but I just sort of wonder, maybe that's just sort of wired into us, this sort of like not coming to spaces like the library, which have these amazing things. And I think that like now is the time, hopefully through this podcast, because you know we had millions of listeners, right? To change the perception of, you know, the library is the place that you want to go, not because you got assigned great expectations and you got to look up homework stuff, but rather this is where stuff's happening. You know, poetry reading's happening. We're cooking. We're recording pieces. You know, I think it's just a, like you said, it's a makerspace, not for some knowledge, but for creating.
Well, I got to say that like, you know, one of the coolest things that has happened, at least from our shop and our partnership with the library over the last year, has been the activations at the Center Street Library as it relates to our the gallery nights that we've hosted in the Amani neighborhood at the Black Historical Society. I remember the first gallery day, I guess it was, when Antoine activated the Center Street Library, and they had poetry readings. We had an artist sort of show some of his sketches and drawings, and there was some, even like some song singing, like some singing and stuff. Like I felt so warm and welcome in the 20 minutes that I spent there, that it was just it was just an incredible. I can't describe it any other way other than it was just an incredible sense of warmth and belonging.
It's amazing. Yeah, I love hearing that. Thank you so much. And you know, that's really our goal. We want people to feel that way, even if they're just coming in to print something off on our printers because they don't have access home, or you know, no matter what the reason is to come into a library building, I hope that people can feel welcomed and feel that warmth, because it's what we as library workers try and project in how we serve our community.
Well, Christina, you're in luck. Well, not luck, you deserve this, but you're not going to be just a library worker. You're going to be a unique role right now, which is you will be deemed the czar of arts and culture in Milwaukee. Only happens on our podcast. You get to do this.
This is the only place it happens.
So in a second, you're going to share what is the most important policy you would pass as that czar. The drawback is it only lasts for 2 minutes. So, you know, it's you have to make the most of it. Your reign starts now, Christina. Okay. Tell us, what are you going to pass? What's going to happen?
Yeah. Well, I hope this small taste of power doesn't go to my head. Yeah, I've been thinking about this. I'd like to see policy action that unites a couple of things, right? So environmental justice, community agency, food security and the culinary arts. So I've been really involved with that community wow. kitchen project with the library. So I want every family, every person to have the land, the supplies, the time, the skills that they need to grow and preserve their own food in a sustainable way. And the companion piece to that is for us to re-envision what culinary learning looks like from birth to, you know, the end of our time here in the world, where, you know, food is recognized as kind of like a cultural conveyor. Every person is supported in developing knowledge of food history, of food science, the way it nurtures us physically and spiritually. And then where we kind of like as a society, we can expand beyond like a utilitarian view of food and cooking while also guaranteeing food access. So that's doable, right?
That was one of the most erudite reigns we've ever had.
Yay.
So,
I know, it's like two more minutes.
2020.
Yeah, exactly. Christina, thanks for sharing that inspiring vision that fuses all those fields together, right? That to me sounds like it creates a more welcoming and inclusive Milwaukee overall, or at least one that's healthier. And sustainable. Yeah. And even though your reign ends now, David and I at Imagine MK and our team are committed to continuing that legacy of what we just shared, right? This incredible, vibrant Milwaukee because of its close relationship and knowledge of the history and the culture of food and how it continues to play a role of not just nourishing us, but also nourishing our spirit collectively as a city beyond beer, brats, and cheese. That being said, wow. Thanks for sharing that. And thanks for being a guest. And before you leave, you got to plug it. How can we find you? Or how can we find the work that you're doing? Let us know. Let our listeners know.
Yeah. So number one, visit mpl.org. It's the Milwaukee Public Library's website. We have a web calendar with all of our programs, all virtually right now. But once we phase back in-person programming, you can find everything there. Follow us on social media for updates. Reach out to me directly too. A quick plug, we are actively trying to collaborate with artists in Milwaukee to offer programming. So if you're an artist and you have a skill you'd like to share with our community and want to work with the library, send me an email, klgomez@milwaukee.gov.
Christina, thanks so much for visiting us today.
Yeah, thank you.
I do not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am. You do not like them. So you say, try them. Try them. And you may. And you may, I say. Sam, if you let me be, I will try them. You will see. Say, I kind of like green eggs and ham.
I think I have to go to the Milwaukee Public Library.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a Shorewood resident, I still got to find a way to go to the Milwaukee Public Library.
Wait, do you have reciprocity as a Shorewood resident?
I don't know. I should look into that. I do go to my library. It's a great library. But it's really awesome to hear how the libraries continue to turn externally, right? And almost they live off, they're continuing that story that you had when you and your family came in. It sounds like they're very much doing the same thing. And I really appreciate Christina, the attitude they have. Almost like joyful abundance. They're really living it at the library as well.
I mean, I think, you know, the thing that crossed my mind as she was talking was, you know, librarians, I think we have this mental model of them as being school marmy or whatever, right? And there's nothing about Christina that's school marmy. But then in addition to that, I think when you think about the library as a cultural institution, I mean, they are basically curators, right? They are curating information and programming. And as she said, the ephemera that is being produced, through present day history and throughout history. I mean, these are galleries of our culture, right? These are institutions of who we are as a city, a county, a state, a nation. And I think that's an important institution for us to support and engage.
And I know we think about performing arts, obviously, when it comes to the pandemic, right? And how vital it is for people to, you know, come out to catch plays or come out and watch shows at the different stages. But it's also affecting our library. You know, that is a physical location, right? That people feel welcome, people feel at home. And gosh, I can't wait till folks have an opportunity. You know, hopefully we can get this taken care of in a way so that people can access the library and access those awesome spaces, the maker spaces and the culinary spaces and all the other stuff. And look forward to that.
Yeah, think about all you can do in that culinary space at the Mitchell Street Library. Like, start like a meal program. You can cook community meals. I mean, it is just like incredible.
Do you think they have a program where you can just sit at the table? Like, I just don't think
with your recent fitness gains, Mac, I don't know that you're going to be sitting at any table for meals.
As long as it fits within the calorie count. That's for another pod. And
that's our next product.
That's our next product.
We're turning Mac into an Instagram fitness influencer.
Yes. Stay tuned for that. But in the near term, we hope you, thanks again for sitting with us and sitting with Christina to learn about the library. We hope that you maybe you had some really cool library stories. Hit us up by emailing us at pod@imagenemke.org. Or, you know, again, clicking 5 stars, share a positive review, share this out. We want more folks to hear us and find us and learn about the Milwaukee arts and culture stories.
Or hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_MKE or Facebook at @imagine_MKE. Mention the pod and we will make you an imaginary friend. Make sure, if you haven't already, listen to our baby pod, Arts Forward MKE. This last episode had Brian Rott, who is the executive director of Quasimondo Physical Theater. The new episode drops this coming Thursday.
Come on back next week and hope your summer continues to be lovely and healthy. Until then, bye.